If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
It's 11. Hi, it's John, and so glad you've tuned in. We're in the Skyline Studios, downtown Chicago, overlooking...
Lord have mercy.
Real pretty day. I almost prefer the days with blue skies and some puffy clouds. It's just been lovely here in Chicago. Hope you're having a nice afternoon. This show's on till 3. After that, Rokan, Anna DeBlantis and company will entertain and inform and whip you into a mild form of hysteria. That's Ro's way. By the way, our Teddy Saves America is selling like hotcakes. Our annual, sometimes semi-annual, conversation with the president on stage. Guy comes out as Teddy Roosevelt, you will believe. It's going to be 10:30 at the Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater. Go to WGNradio.com/Teddy to find out more, or to order a Teddy, or to get tickets. WGNradio.com/Teddy, or call 847-622-0300. It's written in big numbers in front of me, 847-622-0300. You can call right now and get your tickets. It's sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. In just a minute, we'll visit with the people from that organization in California that's going to help Cook County automatically expunge the pot convictions for thousands and thousands of people. If you are one of these people, please call or text 312-981-7200 right now. You may have a question or comment. Do you, do your kids, do your grandkids have a pot conviction in Cook County? You may want to know what's going to happen. But I can't read your mind or know your case. So just call in, 312-981-7200.
Free of charge, by the way. Did you know that?
Yeah, not only free of charge to you, but the newspaper story, Ryan, said that it's going to be at no cost, at least initially, to the county.
It's a not-for-profit. During the press conference yesterday, they asked, well, where are you getting funds from to be able to do this? And they said they got private donors. So obviously they've got some support.
Wow.
But, you know, there are a lot of these agencies across the country that try to get these kinds of low-level crimes expunged. So they probably have a donor list. And, you know, once they get the software all up and running, there you go.
You've heard of first world problems. This is first world solutions. We have people donating money to expunge the pot convictions of people they don't even know. I picked up the phone, my cell phone, a couple times lately. We'll get to that conversation in a minute. Meanwhile, 312-981-7200. Has this happened to you guys lately? You know, you get spam calls on your cell phone, and the one I've been getting a lot lately, three times, is from somebody purporting to be the Social Security Administration, telling me that there's been fraudulent activity with my numbers. Lapkar, are you nodding your head over there?
Oh, yeah.
and it sounds kind of, it's an automated computerized voice, which also sounds official. This is the Social Security Administration. We have noticed undue fraudulent activity. All of your Social Security benefits will be frozen until this issue is resolved.
I hate how they really target older people with, you know, things like Social Security or Medicare.
That so sucks. You're right, because you're a young woman. So
I already don't even answer a phone number if I don't recognize it.
There's that, right? I know. So I generally don't either, but sometimes I do. And because I give out my phone number for a lot of business calls, so
right.
It might not be somebody I recognize. And then it's this, I presume, bogus thing. And it says, call this number back, and they leave you a phone number. I presume some of you have called that number back, and that's where the fraud begins.
Yeah, as soon as you call them, you're done.
Well,
sometimes as soon as you answer, it really kind of depends.
I know. I'm thinking, okay, I haven't given, like, it's not like I clicked on and opened up a virus in my computer. What I'm thinking about is I might call them back, and then they're just going to try and get me to give a bank account number. Or give them my Social Security number.
Sometimes, sometimes you'll call them back and they'll be getting money the longer they can keep you on the phone, too.
I can't believe that.
Also, they can find ways to get into your phone and find your information that way by just calling.
And they can record your voice. So if they ask you a pretty simple question, you say something like yes, they take that yes and use it for something else.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. It's a very sophisticated these days.
They're really busy in Chicago right now. I mean, if Lafka, if you, Lauren, if you've got it, I have, and I've got it a few times.
All kinds. I get that one, the one of like a sheriff and you're going to be arrested. It's like, I've only been pulled over once in my life and that was a fluke. Otherwise, I don't even exist to police because I'm a good person.
Well, ma'am, I don't know that doing 70 and a 45 is a fluke.
Well, no, it was after I moved to Oregon and I was driving someone home because they had been drinking and I didn't know the area. So he last minute told me to turn downtown.
Oh.
And since cops were out looking for drunk drivers, he pulled me over. And that was, I almost didn't know what to do because I had never been pulled over.
So you say, no, I'm not a drunk driver. I have a drunk passenger.
Exactly.
I'm a sober driver.
He was very understanding and, you know, I didn't even have like my registration in my new car yet. That's how fresh I was to the area. And he still didn't give me any grief.
How close were you to getting tased?
Well, I guess it could have been, you know, a screw you away. But yeah. I was very polite. And
you've never seen me on better behavior than when I'm pulled.
Oh, yeah. I know. I know what you mean.
Check your tires, officer. I'd be happy to wax your cruiser. Bill, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, you're on the air, Bill.
Yeah, you're talking about those phone calls. I got yesterday and today, a tech message from a place saying, take out an installment, and you text, they say, would you like to reply to the tech on my cell phone?
So that's...
So they're getting you all kinds of ways. Yeah, and the person you're talking to, I didn't catch you or what, but yes, you never want to say yes to any of those people that call you like that, because
you're kidding.
What they do, they edit out everything else and take the word yes that you accepted everything they said.
Ryan, I've never heard of that.
That's been known. In other words, and you never want to call the number back because a lot of them come from some like over in India or somewhere, and you'll call the number and it'll ring and then they'll put you on hold, and the longer you're on hold, they're collecting money on your phone bill and you got to pay it.
I don't understand that. Wow.
Yeah, you never, those solicitor calls, you just hang up on them. But you never say, is this John Williams? Yes, it is. Okay, they've got you.
How about that? Bill, thanks for the heads up. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Have a good day. Holy cow. Because I thought it'd be interesting. This is me working at a radio station that does the stories that matter. I thought, well, I should call back and see what happens. But if that's got me in trouble automatically, you know, like I know not to click on a document or an email that I don't recognize, but I'm under the impression as of about 9 seconds ago that I can not only receive that call, but I can make a call to that number to see what's up.
I have a former coworker that loved doing that, messing with anyone that was trying to get a hold of him, except for now he gets more than anybody I know, like crazy emails from beautiful women, supposedly, you know, overseas. It's insane.
I get a lot of text and Twitter solicitations. Hi, new to this platform. It's an attractive young woman. And, well, I'm flattered that they found me and want to become friends with me, but I haven't dialogued with those people in any way.
So you're flattered but not surprised.
All right, I have to take a pause. Welcome back to the news desk there, Steve Bertrand. One last thing. Have you guys noticed on my phone, too, where normally it would say Steve Bertrand or Lauren Lapka is calling, now I get ones that say fraud alert or spam or political. They will detail what it is.
Someone else said that to me, and it must be your carrier.
It must be.
It's a great service.
Yeah. So, and then sometimes I get nothing. For instance, this fraudulent call I got was from an 800 number, and it was obviously not the IRS. But others do detail exactly what they suspect it is. I don't know if those bad people know, but we see them coming. It's 1:15 on WGN. I'm John Williams. I'll pause here, and in just a minute, we visit with Yvonne Silva. She's the Senior Director of Criminal Justice and Workforce Development. That's that nonprofit that's going to help expunge the records of people with pot convictions in Cook County. If that's you, call or text 312-981-7200 now. So you've been following that story, right? Kim Fox said when she was campaigning and after she got elected, she wants to expunge pot convictions for thousands of people going back decades. And then there was a press conference earlier this week where they stood with people from this California-based nonprofit and they said, we hope to get it actually up and running before the 1st of January. The intriguing thing to me was it might happen automatically. You don't have to do a thing. here to tell us a little bit about this. Yvonne is on WGN Radio. That's Yvonne Silva, the director over there. Hi, Yvonne. It's John Williams. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
Really good. Thanks for joining us. You guys are a nonprofit, and you have done this sort of thing in California as well, correct?
That's correct. We're a national nonprofit, and Cook for America first developed Clear My Record, which is the tool that we are going to be using with State Attorney Kim Fox's office. We first developed it in California, where, like most states, the record clearance process wasn't designed for the digital age. It's cumbersome, costly, and confusing, and so we turned the process on its head and asked what would work best for people. And we developed some technology that can help government automatically review and automatically provide conviction relief for at scale for tens of thousands of people.
So if our records are digitized and you know what the words are or how the platform works, you can go in, capture those records, and automatically expunge them. Is that correct?
That's right. So Clear My Record technology, we can automatically evaluate eligibility for record clearance. What that means is that we are reading and interpreting conviction data, criminal history data, and we can do that in just a matter of minutes. And so we can review the records of 10,000 people in just under a minute to evaluate eligibility for relief that's available under law. And now, especially under Illinois' legalization law, looking for those convictions that are eligible for automatic relief.
A separate issue, and one we've obviously already dealt with, is while it is going to be legal to have recreational marijuana in Illinois, it wasn't when these people did it, so maybe they should suffer the consequences. But we have decided that, as Kim Fox said, it's time to right a wrong, and we're going to not only make those crimes now not crimes at all, but we're going to expunge the records. But I'm not clear what expunge means. So what would happen to somebody that's on that list, and where are they? Suppose they're living in Cook County today, and they had that conviction on their record. I presume they're not incarcerated right now, so they're just going about their lives. How will this change their lives? What does expunge mean?
Expunge is a legal term of art, and so it's defined under state law. Ultimately, what we're looking at is relief for individuals where those convictions are showing up in background checks, such that they are used as barriers for folks to be able to access jobs, secure housing, engage in their children's lives and education, and invest in their own. And so expunge means either it can mean, you know, destruction of records. It can also just simply mean restricted access so that folks can move on with their lives, both either because the conviction has now been decriminalized or legalized, as in the case in Illinois and in the case of states across the country, or simply as a matter of policy. The conviction is now, you know, as sufficient time has passed that, you know, society, we want folks to be able to move on and invest in their communities and in their lives so that they can, you know, contribute to their communities.
Kim Fox did campaign on this, but was this left up to her, or did the new state law out of the legislature mandate that these convictions be expunged?
It mandates that the convictions be expunged. The state's attorney's office really pushed that this was to be included in the law because of the work that we've seen across the country. You know, our work to support states in providing automatic record clearance started in California with the expediting of conviction release and showing that, you know, look, government can automatically clear folks' convictions.
Right, but I mean, we're our state's attorney here in Cook County campaigned on that, championed it. The legislature passed it, so even if she was adverse to it, it would be happening anyway.
It's happening anyway. Yep, that's right. That's right. So the Cannabis Regulation and Tax, well, the Cannabis and Regulation and Tax Act creates an opt-in process for the Attorney General and state's attorneys to clear convictions in their jurisdictions. I will just correct one thing is this would not have happened except for, you know, showing that it's possible to happen, because we've seen states across the country who have legalized and decriminalized marijuana, but but instituted a petition-based process, which we know is burdensome and does not actually serve everyone who's eligible. And so what State Attorney Fox has done, and now the state of Illinois, is actually said, you know, look, we're gonna decriminalize and legalize and have this policy in place. We better make sure that it's implementable. And the way we do that is making sure that the expungement process actually, folks actually experience that relief. That's how we fulfill the promises.
I see. And are you telling me then that there are some people who, because they had a relatively small amount, maybe a modest amount of marijuana on them, they got arrested. I don't know. Did they go to jail? Maybe they didn't. But boy, in the 1960s, in 1960 anyway, according to the Tribune today, if you had one marijuana cigarette, if you had a joint on you, you would go to jail for a year. Can you imagine? Okay, so what has happened to those people as a result? For instance, I guess it's nice to know that your record is expunged and landlords and potential employers won't know that, but are people really being denied jobs or housing because of this on their records?
So what we see nationally is, you know, this isn't an isolated incident, right? Nearly one in three adults has a criminal record. And, you know, that high rate of criminal justice contact is a function of the policies, mass criminalization and incarceration and policing. And so what we have now is, a criminal record becoming a lifelong sentence, both serving as a cause and consequence of poverty. And that's because there are 48,000 legal restrictions, so encoded into statutes and states across the country that affect every area of life for someone with a criminal conviction.
I understand that, but it would seem to me like if you're so then they find out, hey, so when you were in college, the cops pulled you over, you guys had some joints, and that's on your record. I just wonder if landlords, employers, I don't know who else would interact with this information, but schools, I wonder if there really are dire consequences as a result of that. I'm just curious. I'm not against it. I'm just wondering what the results of that are, how much of a difference this makes in people's lives.
Yeah, we've seen the consequences are pretty significant, and in part both of the limited opportunities, but also the economic opportunities and the economic loss to communities and productivity, right? And so if folks are not able to access jobs that pay a living wage, that has ripple effects both to their immediate family, to their children, and also to community. And so we see generationally this unfolding in that way. And so and then we think about the economics of it, right? When folks are not engaged in jobs, the economic impact in terms of what our communities and having thriving communities is really quite affected.
Oh, yeah.
The research across the country has been consistent on this point, that when folks are actually pushed to the margins because of these legal restrictions that stem from a conviction, it actually harms all of us.
No, there's no argument here. There's no argument here. One in three of us have a criminal conviction on our records. Elif, do you have a criminal conviction on your record? Lauren, you said you've been pulled over, but that's not a criminal conviction.
Nope, I'm good.
Steve does. I don't. So that'd be one in four. One in four. Actually, I don't know if Steve.
You know, John, it depends on what neighborhood you're asking the question. No, it does. That's the problem. Because if you're an African-American man, you are far more likely to have been arrested for one crime or another than if you were a white guy living in the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah. It's 128 on WGN Radio. We're out of time. Yvonne Silva is the Senior Director of Criminal Justice and Workforce Development. We should visit again, Yvonne, maybe as we get closer to this actually, hundreds and dozens of them or dozens and hundreds of them per minute just being expunged. When that happens, I'll call you again. But thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much.
That's Yvonne Silva. Sean Hannity posted on his website and Twitter account the video of Beto O'Rourke making a cheeseburger. Have you seen the video of Beto O'Rourke making a cheeseburger? The video may have backfired. He's got a non-stick skillet there, kind of a fancy skillet on his stovetop, and he's got some cheeseburgers going, and he's using his little metal spatula, and he scoops the cheeseburger out, and then he drops it on top of a buttered English muffin. The posts say things like this on Twitter: he slipped up, Cubans don't use English muffins as hamburger buns.
I like talk radio. When they talk about things, let's talk about things.
Another said, I have a lot of notes on where this went wrong. He can eat bad hamburgers. I don't care. But metal spatulas on nonstick ware? Monster. How can you trust the competence of any candidate who would not at least take the time to at least center the slice of cheese? I have zero confidence in his ability to do anything.
Oh, just stop. Would you just stop right now?
That's why you love Steve Bertrand. It's 1:38. That was from yesterday's show. The world has moved on to more serious coverage of more serious topics today, like, did the president really say that you can blow up a hurricane with a nuclear bomb? And I'm not making that up. Axios is defending their coverage of that story on the internet today. Speaking of the internet, I'll get to that in just a minute, not for long, but just to follow the follow. But speaking of the internet, one Domiti Pongo, a young man who used to work here at WGN Radio on weekends.
Who?
On the line. Hey, listen, once you learn to say Domiti Pongo, you never forget how to say Domiti Pongo.
He will tell you that I got it right away.
He's been replaced by Biff Henderson because it's so much easier to pronounce. Domiti's on the phone. Hi, Domiti. How are you?
What's going on, man? I'm good to hear your voice, John. It's been a long time.
So Domiti Pongo is on the phone line. He did weekend news with me. I don't know, Steve, did you work directly with Domiti other than you were in the same newsroom?
I worked for Domiti at one point.
That's been the joke all along. This guy's a rising star from Chicago, and when we captured him, we thought, we're not hiring him, we're just renting him. You know, he's like beer. You're not going to have it very long. You're just going to move it along to somebody else. Sorry, that's a terrible analogy. I'm sorry, Domiti.
Anytime you compare me to something people love like beer, I'm all in favor of that.
This is his talent. That's Domiti Pongo. So he worked in our newsroom for a while and here in Chicago, and then he has moved on to MTV. On the digital platform, he's a news guy over there and does... The stuff I've seen of you, Domiti, has got you doing a kind of a roundtable news talk show. Tell us what you're doing these days.
Yeah, it's a roundtable news talk show where we break down some things that are happening in the world, but with a pop culture twist. So we wouldn't just talk about the Equality Act, for example. We'll talk about how Taylor Swift gave voice to it at the VMAs. And then every now and then I'm on the red carpet talking to folks before the VMAs and, you know, breaking out content that way. I just came home for Lollapalooza and covered Lollapalooza and talked to some Chicago artists and did somewhat of a mini documentary for MTV News Digital. So it's been a good ride.
So that's a full-time gig, right? I mean,
yes.
And are you on every single day then? I mean, are you posting every day or how does that work?
Yes, every single day on Twitter. You guys can follow at MTV News on Twitter, and we do two videos a day. The morning news story, it might be based in pop culture news or something that's happening in politics, but always with an MTV angle. And then another one in the afternoon, and then you may just randomly see me talking to your favorite celebrity about beer. So it's every single day, man. We're turning out these videos.
You guys don't happen to need a kind of 59-year-old guy from the Midwest to sort of punch up the perspective, broaden the base a little bit, Domiti?
You know, I told them about you, and they didn't bite. I can't say that they did, John. I'll call you back next month, maybe.
Yeah. What fun, right? I mean, because of the power of MTV, those are the three most important letters in maybe the music business. And when you guys come calling, then I guess people say yes, they answer your calls, right?
Yeah, they do. They do. It's interesting, though, how things have changed, too, because in the space when MTV, in my view, kind of went, you know, went more into reality television, there was a void left as far as music coverage. And a lot of these other, some of our competitors with online websites have filled that void and covered pop culture and music and artist interviews in the way that MTV hadn't for so long. And so it's really interesting right now to be at MTV at a time where we're kind of reclaiming that mantle, and that's why we're taking over the digital space, because that's where most of this content lives. You know, back in the day, people say, well, MTV doesn't play videos anymore, but in the internet age, it's almost impossible to play a video on TV that you'll be seeing for the first time. Everyone has already seen it 1,000 times over. So we created this space with my show Need to Know that allows everything to live where people are consuming this kind of content right there on the internet, on your Twitter page, on your Instagram page. And that's basically the premise of the show. And, you know, it's been really interesting to do and watch as MTV kind of reclaims that space. And this year has probably been the most, actually it was the best VMAs we've had in my personal opinion, but also the most viewed, the most digital engagement this year, thanks in part to the team that I'm working with here and people like Missy Elliott winning the Video Vanguard Award, which she should have gotten so long ago, but finally got it, and having some performances with Taylor Swift opening the show. So we're starting to get a lot more of those big moments that MTV is known for, and you know, really using digital to push that forward.
Former WGN Radio newsman Doma Tipongo, maybe we'll just say on hiatus, WGN Radio newsman Doma Tipongo's on a phone line. He's at MTV on the digital side now. And after the VMAs, I thought of you, and I didn't get to you yesterday, but I did want you to jump on with us for a minute today and talk a little bit about that show a couple of nights ago. But before you do that, just a point you made, and that is, I don't know that you would say it's more important, but the digital side, the non-broadcast side, MTV was never broadcast, but you know what I mean. The part that's not on TV is maybe as important or interesting or viable as the channel itself, right?
Yeah, it definitely supports. It supports that space. It makes you relevant in a different way, in a way that this generation can really cling to. You know, nothing will ever take over TV and radio. I don't care what the stats tell you, what history is telling you about what's happening with TV and radio. It matters when you're on the TV screen linear, and it matters when you're on a 50,000-watt signal in a way that it doesn't matter when it comes to internet. But as far as the generation coming up younger than me, behind me, their touch point, the first thing that they see, people are checking their phones in the morning when they first wake up. They're driven by what they see on their news feed, and it lets them know who is really relevant in the space in a way that TV doesn't right now necessarily do.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of TV is on demand, and so, you know, we have to create things that are going to make you want to jump on your TV screen and program that station or that favorite show of yours. Without breaking it out onto the internet, we don't even know about some of these great things that are happening on linear.
Well, does MTV still have VJs saying, okay, here's the counting down the top 10 or playing music videos? Do they still have people blocking out segments and doing that on the TV side?
Yeah, TRL airs Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Eastern, with Jamila Mustafa and Kevin and Sway, who is an MTV veteran. So they still have that show Saturday mornings. But, yeah, I mean,
but just Saturday mornings. Not Monday, not 24 hours a day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's reality shows or stuff.
Yes, yes. Speaking of which, I wish I could tell you more, but this October, I have a new series that's coming out that I'm hosting, telling some really important stories. It's reality in that it's real stories and they matter, but it's serious reality TV, if there is a such thing. And I'll call you closer to that time and give you more information, but we're starting to create more content that means something. You know, I love Teen Mom. I love, you know, the legacy of the new world and all of these other TV shows and Making a Band that we love so much. But this show, I think, is really going to do well to fuse the worlds of pop culture and hard, serious news. And I'm hosting an 8-episode series that comes out this October. So be on the lookout for that as well.
Well, if it's serious news and content, you know, I think big thoughts so people don't have to. Have you thought about punching up this new series of yours with a 59-year-old guy from the Midwest?
My people will call your people in October.
Well, the show will be in the can by October, won't it?
Yeah, gee, that's interesting because you probably have produced it by then, wouldn't you, Domity?
So you guys know too much of the business. I can't even do the Hollywood curve anymore.
You can't give me the Hollywood shuffle here.
I know the business too well.
I know when I'm being dissed. What was the highlight for you of the MTV Awards?
Oh, hands down, Missy Elliott winning that Vanguard Award, and in her speech, thanking the dancers and all of the people who play the background. Because you know, you see the videos, you see the dancers, and they become part of the stage. They become the prop. But with Missy, they were the center. They were like the nucleus, the thing that you paid attention to with an artist like Missy Elliott. And so it not only did that thank you kind of remind me of, you know, how important dances are in you know, hip hop and in music in general, but also how, you know, those of us who jump on the microphones, you know, we get the glory, but it's our producers that help us out so much. It's the engineers who push the buttons. And I love that element of the speech. It really shows how those different elements make up the story.
I think when anybody does that, if you host a radio talk show, you should acknowledge your producers and engineers and all of the players around you. I don't literally do that enough, and I'm no Missy Elliott, right? But I love it when an athlete will thank the trainers and the coaches and stuff like that. I think you're absolutely right. That's a great touch. I love Taylor's open to the show. That was a lot of fun, huh?
Oh, my God. Taylor's too talented. Too talented. And she won Video for Good. That video was amazing. Won Video of the Year. That open, when Taylor opened the show, you knew it was about to be like one for the books. Like, I don't even remember the big moments from last year's VMAs. And this year, when it opened, I said, oh, this is about to be a special one. And to be in the building when some of that stuff is happening was like surreal.
Yeah.
You know, Taylor was amazing. Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello, that steamy performance, I wish they actually would have kissed, but it was still dope. But it was amazing.
You wanted him to do what differently?
Oh, I wanted them to kiss. Did you see? Because Shawn Mendes and Camila. Yeah, Ellis, send them a kiss. Come on.
I thought it reminded me a little bit, the sort of intimacy that they were conjuring up on stage reminded me of the Grammy performance with Lady Gaga, the Oscar performance, right? When they did the Oscar nominated songs, and they said, "Boy, I don't think you can fake that. Something's really special there." And
yes,
I guess this was special on stage two nights ago, huh?
It was. It reminded me of that Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga moment. They get really close, John, and they're like right there, and then they just do like a cute little Eskimo kiss with their noses. I was like, "Come on, man, come on."
Do you think they copied Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper?
I think they replicated some of that energy. I can't lie. But it was the same as the Senorita video, though. The Senorita video was just as hot and intimate. So I think they pulled some elements from that video, but you know they had to have seen that Oscar performance and said they got to top that.
We were playing yesterday the top three songs that streamed this summer on Spotify, and Elif doesn't like the Senorita song. She thinks it's maybe you can explain it. A little derivative. Haven't we heard a song like that before? Was that
yeah? Like there's a new singer named Rosalia who I love, who is very unique, and her style is so beautiful, and she's actually singing in her cultural style. And then you hear Despacito and Justin Bieber speaking Spanish, and
been there, done that.
Yeah.
The one we ended up playing then was number three because she really likes the Billie Eilish thing, so we went with that instead. Is it hard for you to keep up with or track of all of the artists that have been and that are coming up on the scene, Domati, or is that not difficult?
When I first started, it was. Like the first few months, because it's a different muscle. You know, you guys know I'm a music head. I listen to a lot of music, try to stay up to date on new artists. I felt like a grandpa for the first 3 months working here because I was like, wait, who? What? This guy did what album? And then now I'm really getting into Camila Cabello and Shawn Mendes and Lil Tecca, all these rappers and singers I hadn't heard of before. But then now I'm like, you know, you're mentioning Trump news and stuff, and I remember seeing that headline, and I'm like, oh, wait, that was a real story? So it's like I've left space in my brain for more music content, and I've forgotten some of the things in the political world that used to mean so much when I did hard news. So it's like it's been kind of a whirlwind in that way.
Sounds like this new series of yours is going to have a foot in each camp. So come October, assuming I'm not already part of this series, we'll have to talk about that.
We will. I wish I could say so much. I hope the bosses here aren't listening. Let me see if I can tell you something a little bit more specific. There was a story in Chicago of a crime that went national. And part of the series, what I'm going to do is investigate said crime and find out what truly happened. And that is the crux of the series.
The whole series or just one of the episodes in the series?
That's the whole series. I pick a different case in different
parts of America, cases that went viral, and I'll look into them and find out exactly what happened.
Okay, and then one of them will be the Chicago story.
And one of them shall be the Chicago story. Actually, episode one may actually be the hometown Chicago story, and it's a story that we talked about together on WGN.
Can I basically see the crime scene from where I'm sitting right now, Domati?
I think I can.
yes. Very close. A little close to where we were at. Yeah. I got to tell you guys the scoop when we get off the phone, because I think I've already breached contract by giving you that tidbit, but whatever.
Thank you, buddy.
Well, welcome back.
You're right.
You know, we're kind of full right now, Domati, but we'll let you know if we get any openings anytime soon. So it's not the R. Kelly story, obviously. It's the other one. Well, Domati Pongo used to do news here with us on Saturdays on WGN Radio. You may have seen him at the VMAs, and you'll be able to see him twice a day online at MTV.com. Is that where we find your stuff, Domati?
Yes, MTVNews.com or at MTV News on Twitter. And my personal Twitter is at Domati_DONETI_. And you can see all of my interviews with some of your favorite stars on a red carpet earlier this week.
Okay, buddy. Anytime we can do something for you down the road, let us know.
John and Steve, I love you guys. Elif, love you. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Domati Pongo at MTV. We knew him when Lou Manfredini used to walk around going, "We're going to be working for that guy someday." He was gone before we had a chance to finish that sentence.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Two in a row.
Here's John Williams.
Did one last hour, so we're keeping score at home. This is John. We're in the beautiful Skyline Studio, overlooking downtown Chicago, the lake and river, too. It's just lovely here. We hope you're having a nice day. We're here till 3, then Rokon Anna DeVlantis will join and entertain you. By the way, the Mincing Rascals podcast goes up Thursdays. We put up a special edition today because I'm going to be on the road tomorrow. So the Mincing Rascals podcast, for those of you that like that award-winning roundtable discussion, you can get it this afternoon, probably around 5 o'clock, probably around 5.
I need to know what time.
Why is that?
Well, I'd like to listen to it before my relatives do.
I love how I need to know what time.
I want to know what was said.
Why do you want to listen to it before your relatives?
I'm just kidding. Do you listen to it?
I do.
Well, you do because you edit it.
Play it back on Saturdays.
Right.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think the edited broadcast that we do of it on Saturdays at 11:10 is really good. Even better than the podcast itself.
Well, it's edited.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, Steve, maybe you know the answer to this, and if you don't, Elif, I need you to call our last guest back because I think it is a good question. We talked to Yvonne Silva, the Senior Director of the Criminal Justice Department at the Code for America. Those are the people working with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office expunging the pot convictions that people have. I chuckle, though, because she said, well, it was mandated by law. So if Kim Fox wants to jump in front of this and say, see what I did? It was going to happen anyway, right?
Well, yeah, but you were kind of laying it on her. She campaigned on it that she wanted to do it. She pushed for the law, but it was law. So if you don't like it, it's not like she had a big choice. What she did have a choice, and this I learned in the Mincing Rascals, is how to expunge the records. You know, you might have required people with past convictions to come and ask for it, or you could do it proactively the way she's going to do it with the guests that you talk to.
Right. So in other words, it's the law, your records will be expunged, but then you have to know that.
Right. You have to cut. In some counties, you're going to have to go to the courthouse and say,
and do
please expunge my record.
And figure out how to do that.
Here in Cook County, it's going to be more automatic.
You might get a thing in the mail that says, guess what? It's been expunged. It will happen via computer program. You need do nothing. As it should. I mean, if you're going to.
An actual get out of jail free card.
As it should be. I mean, again, that's a conversation you all have already had. Should we do this or not? And we've decided that we will. So then if you're going to do it, don't make it difficult for people to realize, then make it happen. They will. But somebody texted in and said, a couple of people did, and said, will this expungement allow me to buy a gun? And I don't know the answer to that. John, I can't get an FOID card, says another. So, Elif, what happens on that? Will you call her back and ask her? Because I don't know the answer. I didn't ask that one. Never having had a crime on my record.
I would imagine that it would.
Yeah, the thing is, and this is the conversation I was teasing, and I don't have time for it here, and maybe it's not important, but if you have a criminal record, then maybe your landlord or employer should know that, because they do want to know who they're employing or renting to.
But it's not a crime anymore.
Well, it
but it was.
I think that's a...
What?
You're right. A, it was. And B, whether or not it's a crime, it's information that maybe the landlord or employer would like to know.
But there are job searching software or job applicant softwares that if you show any conviction for anything, you're out. You're pitched. You don't have a shot at it. And
really?
Yeah. And that really has an impact in a lot of neighborhoods or a lot of jobs.
He said 1 in 3 people has a criminal conviction. Not for marijuana, maybe. I don't know which ones are worse than others for potential employers, but wow. 1 in 3. I would imagine if somebody was looking at your records and they saw that 10 minutes or 20 years ago you had a conviction for a small amount of marijuana, would that keep them from hiring or leasing to you? Or
if you've got 20 applicants and 15 of them came out with no crimes and 5 did with crimes?
Tell I'm not a personnel guy or a lender, because maybe a lot of you are making that decision that way all the time. It's 2:13, so Elif will get back to us on that. And you can always call or text 312-981-7200. That's the show. Kristen Young is here. She is the executive director of the American Lung Association in Greater Chicago on that lung force walk we've been talking about. You may have heard the commercials. I'm looking forward to this. I've been involved with this organization for a while, and they're going to do the walk this year, September 22nd. That's a Sunday. We are going to be in Libertyville. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, at Independence Grove in Libertyville this year, September 22nd. And I got to tell you, I like the ring of Captain John Williams.
Yes.
Nice little ring to it.
I'm the captain of the team. Kristen, welcome back to the studio and
Thank
the show.
You.
How are things at ALA going?
Things are going great. We have had a lot of great moves. Recently, you may have heard Tobacco 21 passed in Illinois, prohibiting anyone from under the age of 21 to purchase tobacco products in the state. So a lot of big advocacy moves happening right
now. Was it 18 previously?
Yes.
Are we going to change the packaging so that it's more dire than it is now?
Good question. I hope so.
Yeah, I know they do that in Europe.
They do, yes.
And it's appalling what those things look like. Just amazing that anybody would ever pick up the habit. But they do. I have mixed feelings about that here.
Sure.
But I don't know.
I mean, we see a lot. Right now, I think the hot topic is around electronic cigarettes. And I know that's not what I'm here to talk about, but certainly a hot button for us in terms of advocacy and awareness of the dangers of that as well.
What does the American Lung Association do? Are you an advocacy organization? I always think of you as raising funds to go to research and medical procedures.
We are advocacy to our core. Education and research are a big part of that as well. But we are advocating. We just celebrated 10 years of smoke-free Illinois. So this side of 10 years ago, you could smoke in a restaurant, in a bar. I mean, it feels like, I mean, at least
forever
to me, it feels like forever ago, right?
Right.
But some of these bigger moves in terms of tobacco control have happened with part of the Lung Association and other stakeholders.
Just to belabor that point, so it's 2019. Mm-hmm. In 2008, mm-hmm. I could have gone downstairs and smoked in a bar or restaurant?
Yep.
I almost don't remember that.
No, I remember being a kid at a Cracker Barrel of all places, and there was that lattice fence between the smoking section and the non-smoking section, like that would do anything, right?
The smoke will know. It
right.
won't go over
right.
there.
So yeah, I mean, that is part of the Lung Association and our team of advocates. So that is a lot of what we're doing. And there's a lot of big hurdles to still climb.
Well, I'm older than you. And a big part of my life was going out at a bar or restaurant. And then when you came home, you had to launder your sweater.
Oh, yeah.
Because your clothes just smelled of smoke. That was the going out experience.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. We don't have to do that anymore. So then this walk is going to be in Libertyville at Independence Grove, Sunday, September 22nd. What's the scenery there? Are we walking around a lake?
It's beautiful. Yeah, there's a lake. The 3-mile route of the walk goes around the whole lake. We also have a 1-mile route option for those people that don't want to do the whole thing. If you have lung health issues, we can certainly cut that back for you a little bit, too. Best part is it's a little bit up north, but there's free parking. We're pretty much the only people on site that day. It's free to register, free, at lungforcewalkchicago.org. And it really is a family-friendly event. So a lot of opportunities. We're by some pumpkin farms, by Six Flags. We're encouraging people to come up north and kind of make a day out of it.
What time are we walking? 10:30?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.
Route opens at 8:30 with vendors and snacks and all that stuff.
That's the thing. I mean, so it's a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic isn't real bad that time of day, of course, on a Sunday. And when you get there early, walk around, have some coffee. They do a little fitness thing if you want to. But mostly it's just These things are just so nice. There's so many people in brightly colored T-shirts, and they're all positive. And then you all go for a beautiful walk on a beautiful day, and it'll be the third week in September. That's usually very, very nice on a morning.
Right.
And so maybe lung health is your deal. If it's not, come and walk with us anyway.
Right. Enjoy a beautiful day in September out to walk.
I'm telling you.
The walk is really geared towards lung cancer and certainly all forms of lung disease. But since LungForce started 6 years ago, we have seen a decrease of 11% in lung cancer deaths. That's huge. And part of that is around education and awareness that lung cancer is the number one cancer killer. How are we talking to our doctors about it? How do we understand our symptoms around it? So events like LungForce and the walk are more than just the community gathering. It's an awareness opportunity for the public.
And here's why you should care about the work that the American Lung Association does. Tell me if I'm right on this. The incidence of lung cancer is not as high as some other cancers, but the mortality rate is worse. Is that it?
That is right. In Illinois alone, there'll be 6,000 deaths due to lung cancer, 9,000 diagnosed this year alone.
You're not going to feel a lump in your lungs. Too often when people find out they have lung cancer, they don't get it early enough.
Right. Stage 3, stage 4.
Melanoma, you can certainly catch early. I know somebody mm-hmm. was stage 0 because they saw a spot. It's melanoma. They got it early. They'll most likely live a natural long life.
Wow.
Most people that get lung cancer just don't have that luxury. So mm-hmm. what can we do about that? How can we either prevent it or find ways to detect it sooner? I guess that's where you guys are.
That's exactly right. And a lot of these symptoms can come across as bronchitis. It could be a cold. I mean, it could mask itself as a million different things. So as long as you're knowing, you should talk to your doctor about it. Certainly, if you have a smoking history, that's part of it. But more and more people being diagnosed that never have before. So one of the biggest pieces we want to share is that anyone can get lung cancer. And how do we remove that stigma, which just isn't the case anymore?
Probably too soon to know if vaping is going to be as problematic.
Right. Part of the reason that is that e-cigarettes right now are not regulated by the FDA at all. So one brand could have X amount of nicotine in it. The other could have twice as much. So there's a lot of volatility in that industry and certainly not something that we promote as a cessation tool at all.
Okay, anything else that we need to pass along? I should go online to sign up for this walk?
That is right, lungforcewalkchicago.org. Again, September 22nd in Libertyville at Independence Grove. Beautiful 3 mile or 1 mile walk, and we are excited to have you out there, John.
By the way, Beth just wanted to say something. She's listening to this and had, it looks like an observation. Hi, Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, John. I wanted to say that my husband died from lung cancer 9 years ago, and at that time during his illness, we learned from one of his doctors that the younger the lungs are when they are around smoking, that the more they will be affected. In other words, if you have a newborn or a baby or a young child, their lungs are not fully developed, and so they are much more likely to be affected by smoking than, let's say, someone whose parents never smoked.
That is right, and also very timely that they just passed a law here in Illinois that it's now illegal to smoke in cars with kids to that exact point. So
wow,
yeah.
Well, I'm in Wisconsin. I don't know if we will get that law, but it sounds like a very good one.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Beth.
Yeah, sure.
There's a story about that in the Chicago Sun-Times today, and it just reminds you: is that law in effect now, or is it going to affect January 1st? January 1st, yeah. But and I forget all the parameters of it, but if there's a person under a certain age, and it won't, and I think that if any adult in the car is smoking, if the police see it, they choose to pull you over, you will be ticketed for smoking with a child in the car.
Right.
And that's very proactive on the state of Illinois' part, I mm-hmm. think. Probably as a result of advocacy from your organization.
100%. And I mean, secondhand smoke is just as deadly half the time. So certainly something we want to be aware of. And to Beth's point, more effective for those kids and minors.
September 22nd, Sunday, 10 in the morning, John, at Indian Grove. No,
Independence Grove.
Hall. Independence Grove. Independence Grove. In suburban Libertyville. It's not suburban Libertyville if you live there. It's where you live. But I will head up north to Libertyville that Sunday morning. And the website to go to one more time is?
LungForceWalkChicago.org, presented by Northwestern Medicine.
That's a website?
No, just had to get that one in because they're a great partner.
LungForce, but the website to go to is?
LungForceWalkChicago.org.
And your partners are?
Northwestern Medicine is our biggest presenting sponsor.
Amen to that. Okay, Kristen Young, nice to see you again.
You too. Thanks so much.
If I don't see you before, then I'll see you September 22nd.
Sounds great. Thank you.
I guess that's 3 weeks from this weekend, right?
Coming up.
Right around the corner. It's 2:22. This is WGN. So we asked that question. If you have your records expunged, can you get a FOID card? If you have your pot conviction expunged, can you now own a gun? Elif called in a minute. A couple of you texted in when we had those people who are going to automatically expunge your records if you've got a pot conviction in Cook County, and they said, can I own a gun now? Elif called over there, and they said, we don't know. Am I right, Elif? They said they didn't know?
They said to refer to the state's attorney for the answer.
Yeah. All right. Good luck to us on that. We did call the state's attorney's office, and Kim Fox said that they'll try and make up some time to join us on the radio. She did last time. Last time being the really big time. But here's my guess on that. It says, I'm just reading online now, IllinoisLegalAid.org. Illinois follows federal law by saying you cannot get a FOID card if you have any kind of a felony conviction or any kind of domestic violence conviction. Illinois also follows federal law by saying you cannot get a card if you're subject to an order of protection that specifically prohibits having guns. That makes sense. But if, as a result of having a marijuana possession conviction, if that's a, well, what do they call it? If that's a felony conviction, but it's expunged, then my guess is that you would be able to own a gun because you no longer have that conviction. Here's a drop-down. Expunged convictions may still be used against you as priors of sentence enhancements. If you are charged in a new case, expungement by itself does not restore your right to own a gun. In order to recover your gun rights, you must also have a felony conviction reduced to misdemeanor status. Okay, that's from 2017. But I suspect a lot of these convictions for marijuana possession are themselves not felonies. But you've got to get the felony reduced to a misdemeanor. The misdemeanor can be expunged, is what this is saying. Now, that's just me reading the online a little bit. You got a little time to figure that out, but that's the latest on that. What do we got here? 227? I just wanted to mention this too. Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist, forwarded this to me.
He had a great column, by the way, today. Did you read it?
We are talking about the president's negotiating strategy. What he does is he'll say unbelievably kind things about Kim Jong-un, and that, in fact, his wife even likes him, or Vladimir Putin. And then we all scratch our heads and say, why are you cozying up to our enemies? But he said, that's how I negotiate. And it's transparent, but I also said, and will say here, I think it works, or can work. If you say really nice things about people, they will be inclined to side with you. It works, even when you watch it happen in front of your eyes. You go, oh, you're just saying that to win me over. And then you go, but really, you like my hair?
Well, governments have done that to him, right? When he went to Saudi Arabia,
yes,
they put his picture up on the wall.
Yeah, I know, on flags that line streets. And he goes, oh, well, that was really nice of him.
But the difference is, but he will kiss up to President Xi and then the next day call him his enemy.
If I were President Xi, I would be a little, look what happened to the financial markets. He'll say one thing and then another thing. So you can see that people hear that different ways. But I could see how it would work with some of these guys, or at least why he might be trying it. I don't know if he's that consciously playing them that way, but I do think it's a way to play people. In that podcast, we were talking about how it works, and then we all started to compliment each other.
But then you guys also said, unless I misunderstood, that when the president said that he had phone calls from China,
yeah,
saying that they wanted to make a trade deal,
yep,
that was part of his negotiating.
Yes.
But that makes no sense, because if the Chinese didn't make the call, they know they didn't make the call.
And they're the only ones whose opinion on this matters, right?
Right.
Okay, fair enough. But here's the point. So Zorn, another thing that came up was the news cycle this week about whether or not you can blow up a hurricane with an atomic bomb. If you just came from another planet, I'm sorry, but that's what we're talking about. And the president here's what Axios put out as a result of that conversation. Axios wrote, President Trump last night tweeted for the third time that our reporting on him asking if America could nuke hurricanes was ridiculous. In Jonathan Swan's sneak peek newsletter, we reported that Trump has suggested multiple times that officials explore using nuclear bombs to stop hurricanes from hitting the U.S., according to sources who have heard him. Why it matters. We stand solidly behind our reporting. Before publishing, we gave the White House full visibility on key details of our story and more than 9 hours to deny or push back against our reporting. The article is meticulously sourced, Axios says. Since we published, additional sources have corroborated our account. And finally, they write, the president made these comments in at least two separate meetings during his first 14 months in office, and at least one occasion they were memorialized in a National Security Council memo, says Axios. The thing is, I don't think they got a run from that. He's said and done crazier things than this. He didn't say, we're going to do it. He just said, I'd like somebody to look into it. John Williams at WGN Radio did the same thing. And no one cares.
Do you know who this is?
No, no idea.
What?
Isn't that Britney Spears?
There you go.
Okay, I was going to say, I was hesitant for a second.
Yeah, in other words, how do you not know who this is? It's Britney Spears,
right? It's Britney Spears, John.
Of course it's Britney Spears. By the way, speaking of getting names right, a moment ago I gave a wrong name. Daryl Boston is the White Sox manager that was with us at Sox on the Beach, Ron Kittle and Company. It's where Lauren Lapkin and Kevin Powell are going to be.
Coach.
What did I say?
Manager.
Oh, that's right. There's a difference, right? I'm trying to fix it.
But those guys were, what I sat here in the cold listening to you guys.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with how friendly and available all those players were. I mean, I was blown away by it, actually.
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. I can't imagine a team or an organization that would have been kinder to broadcasters who can't get their names right. We just had a blast.
They seemed like they were having really a lot of fun being with you.
We really were. It was a nice friendship. Back to Britney Spears. Why are you playing Britney, Ella?
Britney Spears' 2003 album, In the Zone, was the fourth best-selling vinyl in the U.S. this week, and Britney's back on a U.S. chart for the first time in 15 years.
How about that?
So once again, though, Ella picks the one she likes no matter where they are on the chart, so she's fourth best.
Okay, everybody knows who Britney Spears is. Carrying on. This is the first single from that album titled Me Against the Music, and it features Madonna.
Haven't thought about those two in a while, so kudos to them, huh? You like the mix? You think they're pretty good in this album together?
Yeah. I mean, I liked this song at the time.
2:39, a little musical moment from producer Elif. John Williams here. Jason Benetti is the TV play-by-play guy for the Chicago White Sox. You hear the radio version with Ed and DJ and Andy Mazur here on WGN Radio. Jason, you're on the radio side. How are you?
John, how are you? I'm great. Thank you.
Where are you right now? You must be getting ready for a game or something like that?
I am in traffic on the way to the ballpark, as we all should be on a lovely Wednesday afternoon.
Do people, when they, do they like do a double take? Like, if people see me, they don't recognize me. There's no big deal. But do they look out their window and then look back and go, wait a minute, that's Jason Benetti?
So the fun ones are when I walk by somebody with a Sox hat. Every once in a while, just for fun, I'll look back over my shoulder after I pass them.
Yeah.
And I check and see if they are checking to see.
Yeah, it was me.
It's funny. It's good fun.
You know, so of course you're the White Sox play-by-play guy. Is this your first full season, or was last year your first full season in the booth?
So it depends on the definition. You know, I did 140 of the games last year or so. So I did the bulk of the schedule last year. But this is the first year that I'm in fully for Hawks.
Yeah. And prior to that, though, I was just looking on Wikipedia at your page. You went to, was it Syracuse?
Yeah, I was. I'm an 05 Syracuse graduate. And went to HF through 2001. And, yeah.
And then how, because Bertrand and I were talking about you and how much fun we've had watching and listening to you the last couple of years. And I described your appearance on the scene as a major Chicago sports announcer as having burst onto the scene. But you might disagree with that, having maybe clawed your way up from Syracuse to this spot. But just walk me through real quick. After Syracuse, how did you get to where you are? I was here, I was there. Do that one for me.
Yeah, so I can't really burst through anything with my stature. So I guess I just kind of appeared. So I went to Syracuse. I did a couple years of minor league baseball in Salem, Virginia. I actually did 1 year of women's basketball at DePaul my first year out of college. I did games on the internet for Doug Bruno's team. And then I went to North Carolina. I did basketball at a small school in High Point, North Carolina, High Point University. And then I took over as the triple announcer in Syracuse after the 2 years in Virginia. And as I was doing that, I got a couple of games with ESPN. I got a contract with them a couple of years later. And then I ended up with the Sox, thanks in part to a reunion that I was in town for HF. That weekend, the Sox were around that Monday, and they were interested in interviewing me. And then there I went.
So that's the route to where you are today. How is it that you were doing the Cardinals-Brewers game the other night?
So I'm in the off season. I do games for ESPN, and I have a certain number of games that I'm contracted for. So when I have a Sox off day, it's very feasible for ESPN to say, hey, since you're off, can you go blank? And then the blank was a Brewers game, which was just up the road and easily drivable. So that was very nice.
Is that hard, though? Because I caught that game, and I did a double take because I thought, no, wait, that's, I swear to God, that's Jason Benetti. Is it hard for you to switch leagues and teams because you seem to be ever so knowledgeable, and you guys seem to have a great time, but that's not your regular crew? How easy or hard is it to make that transition?
Yeah, it's kind of the life for ESPN, right? No viewer necessarily cares if you know the person next to you or if you're best friends or not. And they don't care that I haven't seen the Cardinals and Brewers as a game caller for the season. So it's definitely on us to put together a cohesive show and be able to do the type of work that befits, like, having worked together 50 times. So it takes a little legwork, but I generally like the people I work with at ESPN a great deal. Rick Sutcliffe and Jeff Passan are awesome, and I've known them from the past. Yeah. So you dive in, you research, and off you go.
Now, the recall is, I guess, what makes the Pat Hughes and the Andy Mazers and Ed and DJs and the Jason Benettis different than the rest of us. It was so fluid. You weren't stammering to call up a stat. You knew the stories from the National League, and I just don't know how you guys do that.
Yeah, I think it's just about following along over the course of this season. Like, every once in a while on a Sox telecast, we'll tell our viewers about something that's gone on in Major League Baseball, so I keep up with what's going on around the league as much as feasible while still doing justice to the Sox on a day-in and day-out basis. So it's much more about research and time spent in baseball mode than anything.
You guys went on the West Coast a few weeks ago. You had guest announcers with you as you did the play-by-play, and it's been generally described across the country and the city as a masterstroke by the White Sox, and it was probably great for you, too. What did you make of the time you spent in the booth with Bill Walton?
He is a tempest, and no teapot can contain him. He is a wonderful soul who has great cosmic energy around him. And I love being in the same booth as him because of his zeal for life. And what he brought was a totally different, thoroughly fresh perspective to baseball that you're not going to get from anyone else. And I'm fortunate enough to work with somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame and hopefully will be sooner rather than later in Steve Stone. And so it's awesome to have him back after a weekend like that, but it's also nice to see through a different lens the game of baseball that we all kind of get used to and sometimes can even take for granted as diehards.
So what was the moment when the Walton broadcast where you went, okay, I'm going to fasten my seatbelt, this one's going to be different? I mean, you knew Bill Walton and you knew what it was going to be like, but what happened in the booth? What moment, what did he say that you go, okay, here we go?
The first foul ball of the game. he celebrated like the ball dropped in Times Square. And I knew at that point that it was going to be even more of a ride than I expected.
Yeah. Are they going to do something like that again? Do you have any feel for that?
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on which series Steve takes off in the future and all of that. But I think people were generally really happy with the way it went. And I hope that at points in the future we'll have more guests rotating, whether it just be for an inning or whatever. I just always think fresh perspective away from mine is worth it. And just to see what other people think of the team and the game is worth it.
White Sox TV play-by-play guy Jason Benetti's on a phone line. He's on his way to the ballpark. White Sox baseball on WGN Radio, of course, and we got a pretty good group of guys in that booth as well. But you and I haven't met or caught up on the radio side, so I appreciate you giving us some of your time. Give me a highlight or two. What stands out in your mind for the White Sox this season? We know the record, we know the rebuild, but what's been really fun for you?
Really fun for me is the nation getting to know Tim Anderson and Lucas Giolito, not only as possible stars in the game, but also as people. Lucas has been very honest and open about how much he cares about others and how he wants to affect others. He defended Tim to the hilt when Tim had his whole situation with the Royals in April, and very rightfully so. But I think people getting to know Tim Anderson and how much he cares about what he stands for in the community that he came from, whether it be in Tuscaloosa or for people who grew up with not much money, he understands that he can have a hugely positive impact on so many people across the country in the way he handles himself and in the way he plays baseball and in the way he's true to himself. All of that, he and Giolito, I'm glad they're playing well because their hearts are in this for the, if I can say, making a value judgment for the right reasons. And I love seeing them succeed so they can give off more of that sunlight.
Speaking of good people doing good things, one of our hosts here on the weekend, John Hansen, who fills in for me now and again, he might be in this seat this time tomorrow, actually. I'm going to take the day off. John was on Friday night around 11 o'clock, and they were talking about Little League stories, baseball stories. It could have been even out of sports, maybe grade school stories. But at some point in your life, maybe on a baseball field, when you did or said something that you regret and you wish you could fix today. Now, I told you about this conversation off the air to make sure you were cool with my playing it on the air. This is one of the people that called in to WGN Radio on Friday night.
Where are you calling from, Eric?
I am originally from Flossmoor. Right now, I'm driving around Logan Square. So this is back when I was in the fourth grade. We were in a Mustang League, and we had this umpire who just really wasn't good, but he was not good in a way that he just couldn't move, and he couldn't, couldn't get off home plate, missed a few calls. And, you know, when this happens, like always, you know, the parents are, giving him a tough time.
Right.
Players were giving him a tough time. And then it took us a little bit to realize, you know, maybe there's, you know, something a little bit off about this umpire. He's not as agile. Long story short, you know, we gave him a lot of crap for the game. At the end of it, my dad goes up to him. He's like, "Hey, good game. Sorry for all the crap. I might have said something, you know, a little bit, you know, a little rude."
Right.
Fast forward about 15 or so years, maybe more. Jason Benetti is talking about being an umpire.
Whoa.
Jason Benetti is from my hometown. My brother elbows me. A couple days later, "Hey, remember that story Jason Benetti was talking about? I'm pretty sure he was your umpire in that game." And 15 years later, I feel terrible about it because I think my brother's right. Jason Benetti was my umpire, and we were just so mean to him. So, Jason, if you're out there listening, I deeply apologize for all of the Mustang, Flossmoor Mustang double rays.
Wow.
We did not mean it. I still feel bad to this day.
Yeah, and Jason, of
course. Even if it wasn't Jason Benetti, even if it wasn't my favorite announcer, I still feel terrible about the things we said.
Right. For those that don't know, Jason Benetti, of course, an incredible broadcaster for the White Sox. He is awesome. He lives with cerebral palsy, and a more mild form of it than some other folks. Jason's an incredible person.
Part of our broadcast on Friday night. Jason, what's your reaction to that conversation? Did that happen, by the way?
So Flossmoor Mustang baseball is definitely something I umpired. And I definitely remember doing games involving the Devil Rays. There are two things I think I've heard it and I'm laughing. there are two things I think of when I hear him say that. Number one, I apologize profusely for being so bad sometimes as an umpire. And I think if people didn't hear what I said on the air, like, I have very publicly admitted to being a bad umpire. Like, very not good sometimes. Like, just definitely a little over my skis at the time. You know, if there was, like, a confrontation about a very intricate rule, like, definitely not a great umpire sometimes. Totally get that. The second thing is, we were the only umpire for those games. So in Mustang League, we would have to follow around along the bases. And I actually, the one thing that makes me think it might not have been me, the only thing is, and maybe I just kind of mailed it in that day, which I don't know that I did, but the one thing is, I actually, because I knew I couldn't move great, right? I'm not going to be the fastest person, and it's not going to look great. I actually prided myself on getting in position as much as possible. Now, as much as possible isn't enough of a threshold, though, right? Like, I don't know what the other umpires were doing. I might have been busting my tail and still not getting into the spot to make the call. However, I'm pretty sure it was me. I remember a couple games where people were not very thrilled with the umpiring. And rightfully so.
Well, wait, like, a minute. How old are you when you're umpiring these games?
I was like a sophomore or junior in high school.
I think that because sometimes they're in sixth grade and sometimes they're in 12th grade. I think it's ridiculous. I don't care if you have something that limits your mobility or if you're a track star. It's a kid making $9 an hour umpiring a game. That's the only thing that matters to me in this conversation. But never mind.
I tend to agree with that now on the whole, and I also did tend to come home and be like, wow, they were kind of tough on me today. But I also, you know, I get it it's fun for the kids and they should have good experiences, and we're trying to teach them the rules. So, like, the rules have to be right or we're teaching the kids the wrong thing. But there's no need to apologize from him because, you know, I probably screwed up a bunch of calls that day. If I was bad enough that he remembered it for a decade and a half, I probably should have, like, gotten paid only half the rate.
Well, I'll call the officials and have them dock your pay. You're going to have to send them a check now. For
$8.22 and a pack of Big League Chew.
Have a great game tonight. We'll watch you on TV and continue to enjoy the success of your career and also the White Sox on radio and TV. Thanks for giving us some of your time today, Jason.
John, thank you for having me.
Jason Benetti in the booth tonight, and as always, White Sox baseball. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, I presume, are in Studio
A.
We are.
Well, I am. Ro will be here shortly.
Good enough. How are you?
Good. Good, John. So, coming up, our John Travolta interview. A lot of people were asking because we promoted it last week. We weren't allowed to air it last week when he came in studio with us, spent some time with us, impressed everybody. People brought merchandise in. He signed it. He hung out with us for like about a half hour afterwards.
You guys had to embargo it for what, the release of something?
I think for the movie. He was. It was supposed to air this week, but he was doing some promotion last week, so we were allowed because he was talking about the movie a lot in the interview. But he was really, I just gotta say, you've interviewed celebrities many, many times. I have too, especially ones who are on tour trying to promote a movie. You find that they have these go-to things they talk about, and it's sort of the same thing over and over. But he was just so engaging, and he was really into the conversation. He was just I think people will really enjoy it because he just sort of opened up about a few things, and he tells this amazing story in the middle of it because we asked him a question about a friend of his. I think Richard Roper was here and asked him a question about a friend of his in Hollywood, and it's just really it's engaging. So
when are you going to do this?
That's coming up in our 5 o'clock hour. So right after the top five at five, you'll hear from John Travolta right here. Wow. Plus, we'll talk to Ben Bradley and also talk about Arlington Racetrack and some issues going on there with the sports Racino. Racing. Right, exactly. Yeah. So what's happening there? And Richard Roper himself will be here for reviews today as well.
Ah, well, a good show with or without Ro Khan. Anna DeVlantis in the seat right now. Okay, have a good one. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you, John.